A brief history of the Holy Roman Empire. Pope Benedict XI. Now, of course, we still have Philip on the throne of France, and he's the one who wants to be emperor at this particular point. But we have a lot going on at this time period, particularly since we've just gotten rid of a pope. So Philip had long dreamed of becoming the emperor, but his enmity with Boniface ensured that he would not be nominated, and the electorate was now controlled by German princes who did not desire a strong king. Philip was a strong king, if not a good one. Philip had to be content with being the most powerful king in Europe, but he wanted more. He wanted money to finance his campaigns, and if he couldn't be emperor, then he would be the next best thing. He would control the most powerful office in the whole empire, the papacy itself. Philip is greatly respected by many historians and by the French, but his legacy is not a good one. Nothing he did would ultimately benefit the empire or the church. He would drive the Jews from France, destroy the once great Knights Templar, and make the papacy his personal puppet. His only real legacy was to make France a power player in Europe, but it is the end of which that power was used that marks Philip. Some believe he was a devout Catholic, but if he was, then he was of the same devotion as Gregory VII. He was arrogant, self-righteous, and believed that the end justified the means. Even the death of Boniface didn't sate Philip. He continued to demand that Boniface be put on trial, echoing back to the cadaver synod. He was supported by the Franciscan spirituals as well as a number of cardinals. The new pope, Benedict XI, was not about to let the memory of Anagni be forgotten. Benedict did not, however, want to antagonize Philip too much. Much of his wrath was spent on the Franciscan spiritualists, who hearkened the church back to a more pure and noble day. He even had Arnold of Villanueva, a leading Franciscan spiritual and physician to Boniface, imprisoned without trial. In regard to Philip, Pope Benedict was more political. He delayed as much as possible, but in March 1304, Philip's envoy arrived offering to accept any absolution that the Pope might infer upon Philip and his men. The statement is intriguing and shows Philip's arrogance even at this time. Nevertheless, Benedict complied and absolved Philip from all the misdoings. A month later, he agreed to pardon all those who had been involved in the Agni mess, save Nogarth himself, the commander. Despite this, Benedict later called Nogarth and all of his accomplices, whom he had just pardoned, to appear before him on pain of excommunication to answer charges for the atrocities at Agni. This edict was sent out on June the 7th. The trial was set for June the 29th, and the Pope fell violently ill and was unable to carry out his threat. He lingered a month and then died on July the 7th, 1304. The official cause of death was acute dysentery. Certainly, this is not uncommon in the unclean Middle Ages, but the Pope lived like a king and was not confined to a dungeon, nor trapped in a besieged city with the dead. Rumors spread that poison had been placed in his figs, which he snacked upon daily. Given the nature of dysentery, which is, of course, a form of severe diarrhea, this is almost certainly the case. The main suspect was obviously one of King Philip's sympathizers. The next pope would not be elected for nearly a year, so no cardinal was in position to believe himself the immediate beneficiary of Benedict's death. Philip, however, would gain nothing more than the papacy itself. It would be 11 months before a new pope was elected. The eventual choice is ironic, to say the least. The French party desired another French pope, while the Bonificans desired a pope who would avenge the atrocities of Agni. Eventually, the Bonificans were split, with a number willing to compromise on a French candidate whom they believed would be sympathetic to Boniface. What they got was the first of many puppet popes who never set foot in Rome. The term Babylonian exile is used to refer to the time when the papacy dwelt in Avignon. The biblical allusion is to the time when the Jews were exiled to Babylon, away from their beloved Jerusalem. Clement V never crossed the Alps. His beloved city of Rome was abandoned by the papacy for the next 70 years, ironically the same amount of time that the Jews spent in exile. Clement eventually settled on Avignon in the southern end of France as the new papal seat of power. When people challenged Clement, he responded, "Where is the Pope? There is Rome." Reasons for his move to France are given out of his own mouth. He's said to have feared to cause pain to our dear son, the King of France. Even the coronation of Clement was said to have sent a terrible omen to the years to come. After a wall fell, killing 12 men, including the brother of the king and a brother of the pope. No sooner had Clement taken office than he wrote bulls absolving the King of France from crusader vows, any obligation to return money stolen from the church, and sanctioning the Flemish, who were now in rebellion against Philip. Philip finally had his puppet. Now, I would say that the territory of Avignon was actually papal property. It had been donated by a local noblewoman. So it was a good choice from the standpoint of Clement that he could say that he was really independent because he was still on church property. But of course, it's not Rome, and settling that is going to be a massive mess that we will probably end up having to deal with a little bit later on. But yes, it's a pretty tough situation. Now, next time we're going to look at Philip dealing with England, and of course, one of the most controversial events for both Philip as well as the Pope is, of course, the destruction of the Knights Templar. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.